This is shifting gears a bit. This is in a number of ways, but this is more of a review paper rather than presenting specific original research. But I do want to thank the organizers for this opportunity to talk about the potential role for circumcision to prevent HIV and other STD in the U.S. Those of you not familiar with the uncircumcised penis, this schematic shows the flaccid and erect penis. In red is the inner mucosal surface of the foreskin, which has been shown to be more susceptible to HIV infection. And you can see in the lower panel in the erect penis, it's quite exposed to sex partners' potentially infectious body fluids. There's had been quite a bit of observational data indicating that male circumcision was protective for female-to-male transmission. This was tested in what we consider the gold standard randomized controlled clinical trials in three studies, three countries in Africa. In these studies, as I think Jeannie alluded to, the volunteers were randomly assigned to either immediate circumcision or to be waitlisted to be circumcised at the study conclusion. And remarkably, all three trials were stopped early when the interim analyses showed a highly significant reduction in HIV risk in the circumcised men. And so this table just summarizes the three studies. This is probably familiar to most of you, more than 11,000 participants overall. In the intent to treat analysis, 50 to 60% reduction in HIV infection in the circumcised men as compared to the uncircumcised men, the incidence of infection. And then importantly, in the per protocol analysis, accounting for some crossover of men who were assigned to be circumcised and were not, and vice versa. There was even a higher element of protection in that analysis. I'm going to present a little more detail on the STD, I think for this audience in particular. This is data coming from those three clinical trials. For herpes simplex virus 2, there was a 30 to 45% reduction in infection in the circumcised men. In South Africa, the incidence rate ratio was 0.66, which was not quite statistically significant, but in the as-treated analysis, somewhat lower incidence rate ratio and was statistically significant. Uganda, a 28% reduction that was statistically significant. For HPV, for the high-risk types, similarly, a 30 to 35% lower infection rate in the circumcised men. This was looked at in South Africa and also in Uganda, both statistically significant. For trichomoniasis, testing by PCR in South Africa, similarly, it was clinical statistical significance in the per protocol analysis, but was statistically significant in the as treated analysis. In Kenya, where culture was conducted, there was no significant association. And in Uganda, also as alluded to, this was a bit different. This was looking at the female partners of the men in the trial, a significant reduction in trichomoniasis, and then also in those female partners of the circumcised men, significantly lower rates of genital ulcer disease and bacterial vaginosis. For syphilis, there was no significant association in the one study that looked at it, which was a bit of a surprise since the previous observational data meta-analysis indicated that there was an element of protection for circumcision and syphilis acquisition. Chlamydia, there was a not quite statistically significant reduction in the South Africa trial. In Uganda, examining urethritis, there was no significant association. Kenya, no significant association. And gonorrhea, in all three trials, really no association, no protection of circumcision for gonorrhea acquisition. That's all well and good and has really become an important intervention for HIV prevention in sub-Saharan Africa and in countries of a similar nature. as the clinical trial countries. There are key differences in the United States between the U.S. situation and those clinical trial settings. Firstly, the HIV prevalence in the clinical trial countries was some 6 to 12% and about 0.4% in the U.S. Also, the circumcision prevalence already is 70 to 80% in the U.S. versus 10 to 25% in the Africa clinical trial settings. And then the HIV transmission risk groups in the clinical trials really examined female-to-male transmission and so mostly heterosexual risk in those settings, whereas in the U.S., most sexual transmission and about half of all transmission overall is attributed to male-male sex. There's other benefits of circumcision have been demonstrated, which should be taken into account, a reduction in penile cancer, an invasive penile cancer in circumcised men compared with uncircumcised men. These are all from observational data. Also, lower rates of cervical cancer in female partners of circumcised men. These two, of course, related to HPV infection. Also, lower rates of infant urinary tract infection and other penile conditions, dermatoses, balanitis, et cetera, with circumcision. Some of the other critical considerations for the U.S. Safety, the studies that have looked at infant circumcision, the complications have ranged from 0.2 to 2%. In the Africa clinical trials, the complication rates were 1.7 to 3.8%. These were mostly pain, bleeding, and infection. There was no very severe adverse events, no penile loss, no death in those Africa clinical trials. Also important is cost overall, but then relating to the decisions about when to circumcise, in infants, it's some $200 to $400 cost versus in adults, significantly higher cost for adult circumcision. There have been concerns raised about behavioral risk compensation, although in general that was not seen in the clinical trials, but it's certainly a concern if men feel that they're protected and would have more sexual risk when circumcised. Also questions or concerns about sexual sensation and function, although in the clinical trials, again, in general, men were had no change or increased sexual pleasure or satisfaction with circumcision. Also, questions about the ethics of neonatal circumcision, about whether this is a legitimate area for parental choice versus letting the individual, the boy, wait until adolescence or adulthood for this decision. So we have been working on recommendations. We held a consultation in Atlanta in April of 2007. We included external partners, a range of subject matter experts, clinicians, academicians, public health practitioners. There were important data gaps identified in that consultation. We have also been conducting systematic literature reviews. We had a CDC Public Health Ethics Committee review of the issue, especially focusing on the neonatal circumcision issue. And our draft recommendations will undergo fairly extensive review by external peer reviewers, relevant federal agencies, professional societies, and also be made available for public comment. There's really three key data gaps I want to mention. One was about heterosexual men and just translating the findings from Africa to the U.S. setting. And so Lee Warner, in a paper last year in the Journal of Infectious Diseases, studying men in the Baltimore STD clinics. Overall, there was not any protective effect seen with circumcision, but among 394 visits by men who had female partners who were known to be infected, there was a significant, a statistically and clinically significant reduction in HIV infection in that group among the circumcised men. So that was important bridging data to the U.S. For MSM, another important data gap, Greg Millett from CDC conducted a meta-analysis, data from 15 studies, more than 50,000 participants, The overall, the odds of HIV infection were not significantly different among the circumcised versus the uncircumcised. This was also not significant when limited to the men engaging in exclusively in insertive anal sex, for whom there'd be some biologic plausibility of some element of protection. And then also in that large meta-analysis, no overall association between circumcision and other STIs. And so finally, in terms of the data gaps, Stephanie Sansom and others, also at CDC, a study recently published looking at the cost effectiveness of circumcision in reducing the lifetime HIV risk among US males. So this was through cost effectiveness modeling. In the second bullet here, the model or what was seen was a 1.9% lifetime risk for HIV infection. This is using data from the clinical trials and the proportion of transmission attributable to female-to-male transmission in the U.S. Estimated a 16% reduction in that lifetime risk. There are some differences by race, ethnicity in the proportion reduction. And so this then leads to different numbers of circumcisions needed to prevent one case of HIV infection, which is 298 overall, but this ranges from 65 for black males, neonates, babies, as to as high as over 1,200 for white males. And so in this analysis, newborn circumcision is actually cost-saving overall, as well as for blacks and Hispanics. And whereas the cost per quality saved is about $88,000 for white males, which is in the range of what we generally consider cost-effective intervention for the U.S. And so, in summary, now really very what we would consider gold standard data that circumcision reduces the risk of female-to-male transmission of HIV and other STDs. The role in the United States is limited by the lower prevalence of HIV, the lower risk of female-to-male transmission, and also the higher existing prevalence of circumcision in the United States. I've mentioned the other important considerations in adapting the intervention to this setting. I guess I would also mention culture and religion as important considerations in individuals' or parents' decisions about circumcision. And then I've mentioned our CDC recommendations under development, and which will undergo extensive external review. I want to thank all of you for staying through this late hour. Thank my collaborators and colleagues who've really helped in interpreting these data, this information for the U.S. setting. This is a painting by Jackson Pollock, and I feel like as we're trying to peer into this and make out these images, we're also trying to make the most of the varied data on circumcision and make the best recommendations for the U.S. setting. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yeah, this is, I mean, Jackson Pollock is Jack the Dripper, who usually does the splatters, but this one, there's actually some forms in there. I understand it was actually named after he completed it. A question in the back. They are also, thank you. The question was about the American Academy of Pediatrics, which has had recommendations about infant circumcision. They are also engaged in a process to re-examine their recommendations for circumcision in the U.S. They have a task force that's been meeting, actually Dr. Susan Blank, who I think is probably here, is been leading that task force. I'm the CDC liaison for that task force. So they're separate processes between the CDC. Our recommendations also include adult men, and they are working on revising their recommendations for infants. Great, thank you.